I'm Ross Reynolds. This is KUOW Seattle. About every 2 minutes, a woman is raped in the United States. That means about 10 women will be raped by the end of this program. Of those rapes, over half will be committed by someone the victim knows, and the majority will go unreported. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Have you or someone you're close to been sexually assaulted? Did you come forward? Are you glad that you did? Was it something that you never reported? Are you at peace with that decision, or would you have handled it differently if you had it to do over again? I'm at 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. It's toll-free, 800-289-5869, or write to us, conversation@kuow.org. These are, of course, conversations you might not feel comfortable having on the radio. I want to give you a phone number if they're not. The King County Sexual Assault Resource Center's resource line is 888-99-VOICE. That's 888-998-6423. It's open 24 hours, and if you'd like to talk to someone in private about it, do that. If you feel as though you have something to share with our audience, something that might help someone who's listening, then give us a call at 206-543-5869. Joining me in the studio, Mary Ellen Stone, Executive Director of the King County Sexual Assault Resource Center, a subject she says that really needs to be more part of the conversation. So I thank you for being part of the conversation today.
Thank you for having me today.
These numbers are alarming. A rape every 2 minutes. Is the number of sexual assaults on the rise?
No. In fact, if you look at sexual assaults, children, teens, and adults, what we know is that child sexual assault is actually on the decline in this country, which I think is something that we should feel very encouraged about. Not to say we're done, but what we know based on some studies that have been done over the last 10 years is that child sexual assault is down 38% over the last 15 years. Combination of awareness, more communication around that, prevention tactics, better laws, and there are a lot of factors in there. But I think we should take heart with that.
People report sexual assault to police. They also report sexual assault to you at the King County Sexual Assault Resource Center.
Right.
What about the numbers that you see reported to you? Are they the same as what gets reported to law
enforcement? No. You know, the estimates, of course, vary on this because it's a little hard to know. Yeah. But the most current information I have seen is back, and this comes out in 2005, is that about 40% at most are reported to law enforcement. Those are national figures. We don't know what they are locally, but certainly well below 50% are reported to law enforcement. So our figures are always going to be different for that reason alone.
Why is it so underreported?
You know, I think, like with anything, there are a lot of factors. Over the last 20, 30 years, I think we're certainly able to talk about sexual assault more, but I think there's still a lot of victims feeling like it's my responsibility, it's my fault. I think there's also a perception that sexual assault, if it's a stranger rape, stranger involved, then that is much more likely to be reported to law enforcement. When it's someone the victim knows, as you started out with your intro, that's where the victim blaming, victim feeling like, I can't report, no one's going to believe me. And of course, that's something the offender will say as well. All of those factors discourage people from coming forward.
Well, I would think a victim might be thinking to themselves, was this a sexual assault?
Absolutely.
How do they decide that? How can they make that determination to themselves?
Well, you know, it comes down to if sexual assault, broadly defined, is forced sexual contact of some sort. So if a victim is feeling like, you know, is saying, you know, I was forced into a sexual situation that I did not want, that I was saying, I don't want this, then that would constitute sexual assault. The legal definition is going to be determined by law enforcement. It's going to be determined by or the legal case, if there is one, is going to be determined by law enforcement prosecutors. What the victims do is come forward and say, this is what happened to me. How that gets defined legally is not something that victims are in a position. I mean, that's not their decision to make.
Someone was involved in an incident. They didn't fight back. So they wonder, could this have possibly been a sexual assault if I didn't physically fight back?
And I think part of what makes it complicated for people is that the portrayal often in the media is of a certain type of sexual assault. That happens certainly, but that's not most victims' experience. So somebody may very well. I mean, so, you know, we look at the Steubenville rape case, right? Very high profile. And certainly legally, that fits a sexual assault definition. But a lot of people, a lot of young people in that were saying, huh, didn't know that that's what constitutes sexual assault. And so I think part of what we are doing is broadening the definition to say, let's look at what good relationships do look like. Let's look at healthy relationships. Let's look at the issue of consent. We do a lot of work with young people where the question initially started out, how are you safe online? But it quickly turned into young people wanting information about what constitutes consent. What's a healthy relationship look like? How do we go about negotiating?
I want to just ask you that question. What constitutes consent? When should someone who's been involved in an incident realize that they had given consent, and when should they go, you know, I never did give consent? Where's the line?
Well, I mean, what we encourage people to do is to really start having these conversations with a partner, a potential partner, before you get to that point. I mean, and you know, some of our staff are saying, consent needs to be, you're going to be sober. Because that opens up just a whole other realm of misconception or miscommunication, sober and verbal. I mean, we need to be clear on that. Now, this, you know, takes us into the whole realm of what's a healthy relationship, what's healthy sexuality, but those are the conversations I think that we very much need to be having with young people.
You know, I remember the phrase no means no, and it has to do with a woman who someone was coming on to, and the phrase was no means no, I don't want to have sexual relations, because at one time it was just, oh, this is just a play thing that's going on. But in that case, it said that if you said no, it meant no. Is it sexual assault if someone doesn't say no? Can it be construed legally or morally as sexual assault if someone doesn't say something?
Well, sure. I mean, okay. We look at what the laws say around, you know, if a victim is incapacitated and can't give consent, as in can't say no.
Sure.
I mean, so that's part of the legal definition of rape. But what we want to do, too, is broaden the conversation so that people are having these conversations in the case of young people, their parents or their friends, in the cases of adults, with their peers, because it's obviously a real complicated social environment. And what we have done up until this point, I think, in the whole issue of sexual assault in the state and in this country, is look at sort of one end of the continuum. And so we're starting to, I think, as a community, say, yeah, we can talk about sexual assault, especially when we recognize, you know, stranger rapes. But when we know, as you have said, and this has been our experience as well, the vast majority of the sexual assaults involve people who know each other.
Sure.
That's when we need to look at the broad definition of relationships, communication, and then especially with kids, you have the power imbalance. So all of those factors come into it.
Mary Ellen Stone is with me. She's executive director of the King County Sexual Assault Resource Center. And this is the month to be talking about these issues, and that's why we're doing this now. Maybe you'd like to talk about it based on experience that you had that you'd like to share with others. We're at 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. Maybe you just have a question of what Mary Ellen has been telling us. It's 800-289-5869. Or maybe you'd like to talk to someone at the center's resource line. This is an offline thing. You can call them at 888-99-VOICE. That's 888-998-6423. Now, the laws on sexual assault have changed a great deal. There used to be something called spousal exemption. And spousal exemption, as I understand it, meant that under no circumstances could a husband be charged with sexual assault of his wife. That ended for rape in the first and second degree some years ago in our state. And just recently, just this week, the Washington State Senate joined the House in ending the so-called spousal exemption for rape in the third degree. Third degree rape is in which no physical force was used. And also ended the spousal exemption for the charge of taking indecent liberties. What does that mean to the way that Washington approaches sexual assault, this change?
Well, you know, it's a great change. It's long overdue. Washington was in the vanguard of progressive laws what we would call the marital rape exemption back in the early 80s, and we sort of lagged behind when we get first and second degree done. But we were at that point not able to get the third degree rape charge in there. So what this means is it gives it recognizes more the amount of sexual assault within a domestic violence situation, of which there's a considerable amount. So this gives victims some more options. And the other thing is it gives people an ability to say, what happened to me was in fact wrong. And it's recognized as being wrong. And I think that that's an important piece.
Was this spousal exemption being used a lot in cases where husbands were accused of third-degree rape? Were they actually claiming the spousal exemption and getting off?
You know, I don't know that it was actually used that much.
So this might have been more a matter of just cleaning up the books on
It's certainly, we want to keep those options open for people. But to my knowledge, there weren't a large number of cases coming up where that was happening.
We're going to go to the phones right now, and we have Jane on the line giving us a call. And we've asked those of you who have experienced sexual assault and reported it, didn't report it, to tell us what your experience was. Maybe it's something that others might be able to share. Jane, thank you for taking the time to give us a call today and being on the line with me and Mary Ellen Stone from the King County Sexual Assault Resource Center. What happened to you?
Hi. I was in college and had way too much to drink and ended up being assaulted and was pretty much unaware for most of it, but it was still pretty traumatic. And I actually did report it right away, went to the emergency room, had a detective on my case.
Jane, how long ago was this, just so we get a time reference?
How long ago was this?
Yes.
This was about 3 years ago.
Okay, thank you.
And the case actually didn't end up getting taken up by the prosecutor, most likely because there wasn't enough evidence that they could use to actually make a case in court. And so I guess I just wanted to share that, sadly, even the cases of sexual assault that do get reported, a lot of them don't get taken up because it becomes a situation of he said, she said, or they said, they said. And that, sadly, also the most of sexual assault cases that do end up happening are under the third and second degree rape. And those are the ones that end up having the least amount of evidence.
This must have been so hard for you, Jane, to bring this forward and to take the process ahead and then be told, oh, well, we can't really do anything.
It was frustrating just because I did report because I wanted this person also had domestic violence charges on them, and I knew that this was a behavior that they could repeat, and I wanted to prevent that. And so it was frustrating that the legal system failed to do that.
Despite the fact that it didn't get resolved the way you wanted it to, Jane, would you have done the same? Would you do the same thing over again if you had it to do over again?
Of course. I mean, I know that in some cases it does get to go forward. And I mean, I never want to have any doubts that I didn't do the right thing for myself. So.
You know, Jane, I wanted to say thanks. Thanks for calling in. And I'm sorry that that happened to you. And I think, and I know that your experience is, it's not unusual where for the prosecution, it may not be a question of did this happen, but can we prove this to a jury? And that's often the calculus that they're going to be going through. I think for all of us, we all know people have been victimized. We may hear from them that this happened to me. And I think one of the most important things that we as friends and partners and our loved ones is to support people and provide sort of a non-judgmental support, knowing that the criminal justice process, regardless of what happens in that, that's not the arbiter of whether or not an assault occurred. That's one vehicle, and that is our formal vehicle for holding people accountable, like this person who assaulted you. But if the case doesn't go forward, if it's not taken by the prosecutor, if no report is made, that doesn't mean that the assault didn't occur.
Jane, thanks very much for taking the time to call us. I really appreciate you sharing your story with us.
Yeah, thank you for listening.
I want to go back to conclude with something we talked about a little bit earlier. Over half of sexual assault victims knew their perpetrators before the assault occurred. What kind of warning signs, what should people be looking out for to see that this is something mm-hmm. they should be paying mm-hmm. special attention to?
You know, a good question. I want to broaden this discussion just a little bit, partly because we know that sexual assault is so often something that happens to children and teens as well as young adults. Now, that we certainly see a lot of assaults happening to older people who are vulnerable. What we see with offenders is that there's usually this process of grooming. So it's rarely sort of a single one-time action that results in a sexual assault, but it's ignoring people's boundaries. It's becoming way too close, way too quickly. It's assuming a familiarity or an intimacy that isn't there. So that you may see that in young adults. For kids, it may be taking on roles and responsibilities or building a relationship that is much more around the adult's needs rather than what's in the interest of the child. So we urge parents and anyone, so like if there's this sort of becoming way too close, way too quickly, that suggestion that I know you far better than we really do, you know, being able to say, I've got some space, I've got some boundaries, all of those. And that saying no at any point is a perfectly legitimate thing to do without worrying about hurting somebody's feelings.
There's so much more to talk about, Mary Ellen Stone. Beyond your resource line, 888-99-VOICE, 888-998-6423. Any resources you'd like to leave us with?
Absolutely. Washington State has some excellent resources. So if listeners are in other counties, there are sexual assault programs in every single county, and they can be they're probably online is probably the easiest way to
check
find
the county
things.
Website, probably.
Most organizations are not connected with King County. We're all private nonprofits, including KSARC. Here in Seattle, we have Harborview Center for Sexual Assault and Traumatic Stress, which is another resource. So I would look up sexual assault programs online to find the one closest to you.
Mary Ellen Stone, thank you so much for coming by. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
David Hyde produces our show with Arwin Nix. We get production help from Hannah Byrne and Cameron Drews, Andy Hurst and Amber Cortez. Bernard Ouellette is our engineer. I'm Ross Reynolds.